We're talking about the role of diaper banks on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. These community-funded programs around the country provide free diapers and baby items to low-income families, and they've seen a spike in need in the pandemic. Closer to home, MVP Bucks superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo has raised the profile of diapers. He's headlining a diaper drive to help Milwaukee Diaper Mission. Is it difficult to afford diapers? Do you make hard choices in order to buy them? It's 800-642-1234. Joanne Samuel Goldblum is CEO of the National Diaper Bank Network. It's a nonprofit that seeks to eliminate diaper need, partnering with more than 200 diaper banks, diaper pantries, and food banks nationwide. Joanne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
We also have Megan Johnson with us, co-founder of Milwaukee Diaper Mission, a nonprofit formed last year to address the diaper and period supplies gap. Megan, welcome to you.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you.
Megan, let's start with you. Why did you start this nonprofit last year focused on diapers?
I discovered that Milwaukee did not have a diaper bank, and doing some research, learned about a lot of other diaper banks around the country and connected with the National Diaper Bank Network and realized that most major cities have a program like this and Milwaukee did not. So I decided to start one.
What is the need like? What have you seen since starting up the nonprofit?
The need is very great here in Milwaukee. We're one of the poorest and most segregated cities in the country, and diapers are a vital product that many, many families here need. One in three families in the United States struggles to afford enough diapers, and that's a pre-pandemic statistic. So the need is very great here, and we have our work cut out for us.
And so you have this warehouse then in Milwaukee. How many diapers are in it? What is that like? Can you take us on a tour?
Yes. So we have what we call a warehouse. It's actually more like an office, but we call it our warehouse. And it's only about 1,100 square feet. When we moved in last year, we outgrew it almost immediately. So right now, inside our space, we have about 80,000 diapers housed. And then we have a separate facility that is a cold storage facility with much more product stored. And we're waiting to move into a larger space so that we can really start making more of an impact in Milwaukee.
Joanne, when you hear of an upstart diaper bank like the one here in Milwaukee, what's some tips and advice you see on these new diaper banks just starting now?
Well, you know, first off, it's always really exciting to see people like Megan, taking this and running with it and creating something really important in their own communities. The advice we give is, advice that I think Megan followed really well, which is to know your community, to find out, do a needs assessment, find out if anybody is distributing diapers, and then find out who needs them. And that's really the important place to start. And then you really need to, as Megan has done, become a fixture in your community as a person who talks about diaper need, period poverty, and a lack of material basic needs. So those are really the things that people do to start. And, programs across the country range from, what Megan just described of having, a couple of spaces and sort of trying to figure out where the next big space is, to, really large organizations that have, thousands of square feet of, warehouse space and distribute, upwards of 1 million diapers a year.
Give us a sense then, Joanne, what is your role in a national network? What do you do?
So I do a lot of raising awareness. So I talk to a lot of people like we're doing now about the issue of diaper need and about the issue of poverty in the United States, because that's really what the issue of diaper need is. It is a direct correlation to poverty. And, in the United States, we really don't talk about that very much. And it's often sort of swept under the rug. So that's a big part of what I do. And then, we have a staff of 15 people. We do research. We're doing a nationwide economic analysis study, and we do policy work. We, work to both change local, and state laws and regulations, and also federal, because right now there is no federal support or subsidy for diapers or period products.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Joanne Samuel Goldblum, CEO of the National Diaper Bank Network. Megan Johnson is co-founder of Milwaukee Diaper Mission. You can join in. Have you needed diapers and not been able to get them? What should be done to improve access? Should schools give out free period products? Join in at 800-642-1234. Megan, you're 100% volunteer run, and you co-founded Milwaukee Diaper Mission with you and a family member. Is that sustainable?
That's a great question. Yes, I co-founded Milwaukee Diaper Mission with my cousin, and at the time, we were very fortunate to be able to work 100% on this project. And we now, hopefully, will be able to raise the funds and the support to be able to pay staff and to be able to move into a larger facility. And then, of course, we would be much more sustainable at that point.
You're also in the midst of a diaper drive. What does that entail?
We are very fortunate to have partnered with Mariah and Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks, along with Nuna and Huggies, to raise funds and also collect diapers at all three home games here in Milwaukee at Fiserv Forum this week. So we had our first diaper collection last night at the Lakers game, and then we'll have two more this weekend on Friday and Saturday. And we have an ongoing online fundraiser where folks can send dollars so that we can turn them into diapers and make more of an impact here in the city.
Joann Huggies, Pampers, all of these big manufacturers and a lot of revenue in diapers, they're going to be needed. What is the role of manufacturers in getting these products to families who can't afford them?
So, Huggies is the founding sponsor of the National Diaper Bank Network, and we have been partnering with them since I founded the National Diaper Bank Network 10 years ago. Over the years, in the 10 years, they have donated more than 200 million diapers to the National Diaper Bank Network, and through that to diaper banks across the country. So, we really see them, Huggies is much more than a sponsor. They truly are a partner in working to end diaper need. And so I feel really, really lucky to have that relationship. It's really been such a wonderful thing, both for the work we do nationally and for local diaper banks.
We've seen such huge supply chain issues. We've seen a run on toilet paper. What have you seen in the area of diapers in these times in the pandemic?
I always pe people ask about this, and I always say, I'm a social worker. I'm not a logistics person, or we have seen, we certainly are hearing the same thing that everyone else is, that there are supply chain issues. We have found that we are able to get diapers. It's not always from the same manufacturers for the same place that we might have previously, but we have not been in a position where it is not possible to get diapers. So, that is our experience. I think that while some of it is supply chain, I think that some of it goes back to hoarding and people hearing that there's a problem and then buying more than they need.
We have Joanne Samuel Goldblum there, leads the National Diaper Bank Network. Megan Johnson with us leads the volunteer-run Milwaukee Diaper Mission. What has it been like for you to get diapers in the pandemic? Have you led a diaper drive in your community? What is the need like where you are and for baby supplies in general? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more conversation here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about nonprofits trying to eliminate diaper need in Milwaukee and across the U.S. It is the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the National Diaper Bank Network, one in three families struggle to buy diapers. And they say government safety net programs do not recognize diapers as a basic need. We have Joanne Samuel Goldblum, who leads the National Diaper Bank Network, and Megan Johnson, who founded Milwaukee Diaper Mission last year. They stay with us. Let's bring on a caller now, Elena in Rolling Ground. Elena, hi, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm wondering if any of the diaper banks also try to provide a couple dozen non-disposables and a couple of buckets and a lot of times if it's just pee, you can just rinse them out, and that could help bridge things and maybe be a educational link if it's not culturally insensitive, or for families that have support that could handle that. And anyway.
Elena, thank you for bringing cloth diapers up. Megan, go ahead.
Yeah, so we provide cloth and disposable diapers. As an organization, we believe very strongly in dignity of choice and making sure that families have every option presented to them. I'm a cloth diapering parent myself. I'm also a disposable diapering parent. So I believe there's space for both in parenting of young children. And as a pretty strong advocate of cloth diapers, that's really what brought me to launch Milwaukee Diaper Mission in the first place. So yes, we offer cloth diapers free to anyone who needs them. We offer education. We teach virtual classes to families and ongoing support. So if they ever have questions or need help, we are there for them.
Joanne, what is the network's position on cloth diapers?
Very much the same as what Megan just said. Most of our member diaper banks offer both cloth and disposable. The thing that we always say, though, just to sort of set the stage, according to the Real Diaper Association, which is the cloth diaper association in the United States, only about 10% of U.S. Americans use cloth. So I would say that's pretty well reflected in the diaper bank community in terms of what folks are asking for from diaper banks. But as I said, most of our diaper banks do offer cloth. And in some communities, it's interesting, actually, because it does seem to be sort of community to community. In some communities, cloth diapering is very well accepted. Lots of people do it, and it really works. And in some communities, that's just not the case. And that's pretty much what we see.
In the last moments, I want to turn to government. Joanne, many state governments are receiving an infusion of ARPA pandemic relief aid. Have you seen any movement towards states putting money into their diaper bank programs or using federal resources on diapers?
Yeah, actually we have, and some during COVID and some prior. So California, for example, has actually done a lot with funding diapers. They have done two different things. One is they created a diaper stipend, about $30 a month per diaper wearing child, for families who receive CalWORKs. They also have independently funded a number of diaper programs throughout the state of California. Connecticut has also used TANF dollars, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families dollars, to pay for diapers. And there has been now during COVID, a number of states, for example, Georgia just has announced that they will be putting ARPA money towards diapers. And there have been a number of other states as well. I do think that is really, really the direction that things are moving in. So I'm very, very optimistic about that.
Megan, I want to give the last word to you. What do you see as the next steps for Milwaukee Diaper Mission? And what would you say for people who do want to help?
So we always say that diaper banks run on diapers, dollars, and doers. So those three things are what we need most right now. People can donate diapers to us. People can send a monetary contribution to us. And then, of course, we need volunteers to help us package product and get it out the door. As I mentioned before, we are bursting at the seams in our current space. And so the next step is to find a much larger facility that we can not only accept more donations of diapers into and package, we can have volunteer shifts where, you know, local companies can bring in their staff to do a day of service. We can have school groups come in and help us. So that's really the vision for 2022, is locating a new space and raising the funds to be able to support it.
Megan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Joanne, thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Megan Johnson is CEO and co-founder of Milwaukee Diaper Mission. Joanne Samuel Goldblum, CEO of the National Diaper Bank Network. For more information about their nonprofits, we have them at WPR.org/mornings. Now, a few teams might stand out when you consider the most successful programs in sports. The New York Yankees, the Packers, the U.S. Women's Soccer Team, UW-Whitewater Wheelchair Basketball could easily join the list. Megan Hart has more on the return of a program that's won a combined 16 national titles.
Three-time Paralympic gold medalist Christina Schwab says there's a common misconception that wheelchair basketball is a slow sport. But you don't have to watch the Warhawks for long to figure out that's anything but true. Schwab is a Wisconsin native and now head coach of the women's team at UW-Whitewater.
When you come and the first time you see wheelchair basketball, you're going to notice the chairs and you're going to notice like all the contact and people falling down. And then once you get past that kind of like, whoa moment, you're going to realize that it's basketball.
Maida McCabe fell in love with the sport for its physical nature.
There's moments where we're all diving for the ball, we're falling over, we're crashing into each other, so it's very, very intense, and that's part of the reason why I like it, just because I'm very competitive.
Like other players, the freshman from Washington, D.C. says the wheelchair basketball program is a big part of the reason she's at UW-Whitewater. She's getting ready to play her first college game, with eight teams from around the country descending on South Central Wisconsin for a tournament that starts tomorrow. McCabe and her teammates lifted weights and tuned up their wheelchairs on Friday.
15 seconds, let's go! Push yourself!
She's a little nervous, but excited too.
I'm confident that we will do well and that we've grown so much as a team that we're going to do amazing.
But even more experienced players haven't seen much competition recently. Last season was canceled due to COVID-19. Junior Grace Altrock says it was really tough when the pandemic cut the 2020 season short just before the national championship. She's looking forward to this weekend.
I have family coming up from Nebraska because that's where I'm originally from. And so it's my 10th year playing, and so I'm just really excited overall.
Before she started playing wheelchair basketball in sixth grade, Altrock says she sometimes felt left out since she couldn't participate in sports.
I immediately fell in love with the sport, knowing that there are people that are disabled like me and that I can do everything that I want to do, but I just do it in a different way.
Altrock said it was a huge honor when she was recruited to play at UW-Whitewater. The Warhawks began their adaptive recreation program in 1973, and now two banners hang in the gym, highlighting their many titles. The UW-Whitewater men and women last won championships in 2016 and 2014, respectively. Freshman Cameron Poole says it means a lot to wear the purple and white.
Just the legacy that other players left behind. Hopefully I'll leave one of my own behind too, maybe a championship or two, maybe three. But it just feels great to be able to play for a university that supports the wheelchair basketball team as much as the one here does.
And for the Illinois native, something else helped set UW-Whitewater apart.
You know, I came here and I was like, what differentiates Whitewater from like a University of Illinois or a University of Alabama? We're a D3 school, so they can't offer, you know, athletic scholarships. They don't have all the big fancy facilities, but they turn out Paralympic athletes like crazy.
Five former UW-Whitewater players were on the U.S. men's wheelchair basketball team that won a gold medal at the Tokyo Paralympics this year. Schwab was on the sidelines as a coach. Senior Ryan Gladchuk began attending wheelchair basketball camp at UW-Whitewater when he was 12. There are some strong collegiate programs out there, but at a recent practice, he said the Warhawks are way ahead of most opponents when it comes to legacy. The chemistry major and his teammates practice every weekday morning. Plus, they complete two lifting sessions and three scrimmages each week. Players say wheelchair basketball at UW-Whitewater is just like playing any other collegiate sport. For Gladcheck, that includes the rush he feels competing at home.
There's a whole gym cheering for you, and your first experience at a home tournament is just so much more fun. You have all your friends and family watching you play, and everything you've worked for is like they can finally show it.
The tournament will take place tomorrow and Saturday in Whitewater. Megan Hart, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Be sure to stay with us as we get insights from a former Wisconsin State Supreme Court Justice and retired law professor about the use of self-defense in Kyle Rittenhouse's murder case. Have you been following the trial? What do you make of Rittenhouse's self-defense argument? What stands out to you and about the jury deliberations with wanting to see the video evidence? Join in 800-642-1234. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.